Falter-Podcasts werden durch Werbung unterstützt. Das hilft bei der Finanzierung unseres journalistischen Angebots.
Hereinspaziert durch unser Burgtor. Ob Burgherr, Ritterin, Stallbursche oder Gauklerin. Die Burg Liechtenstein in Maria-Enzersdorf bei Wien lädt zu Erkundungen ein und weckt bei Groß und Klein die Abenteuerlust. Erbaut im Jahr 1130, ist die Burg bis heute zu 60% im Originalzustand erhalten. Waffenkammer, Turmzimmer und Ritterstube. Die Stammburg der Fürstenfamilie von und zu Liechtenstein bietet Einblicke in das Leben im Mittelalter. Besuchen Sie uns jetzt in der Erlebniswelt Burg Liechtenstein. Jeden Sonntag mit eigener Kinderführung. www.burglichtenstein.eu.
Falter Radio, der Podcast mit Raimund Löw.
Sehr herzlich willkommen, meine Damen und Herren, zum Falter Radio. Donald Trump erlebt dieser Tage die schwärzeste Zeit seiner Amtsperiode im Weißen Haus. Sein ehemaliger nationaler Sicherheitsberater John Bolton beschreibt den Präsidenten als inkompetent, als autoritär und als Gefahr für die Republik. Sogar seine eigene Nichte hat sich öffentlich von Trump abgewendet. Das Management der Covid-19-Krise erweist sich als Desaster und der Wirtschaftseinbruch in Amerika ist viel tiefer als angenommen. Die erste Wahlveranstaltung Trumps nach dem Shutdown in der Stadt Tulsa in Oklahoma wurde ein Flop. Aber der harte Kern seiner Anhänger hält Trump die Treue. 5 Monate vor den Präsidentschaftswahlen ist Amerika polarisierter denn je. Den gesellschaftlichen und politischen Hintergrund erkundet die frühere österreichische Botschafterin in Washington Eva Novotny im Online-Gespräch mit dem Historiker Stephen Beller in Washington D.C. Stephen Beller hat in Cambridge, in Princeton, in Wien und Washington gelehrt und geforscht. Beim Online-Talk des Bruno-Kreisky-Forums in Wien in englischer Sprache wollte Eva Novotny zuallererst wissen, was sich denn eigentlich bei den Demokraten tut, um ihren Präsidentschaftskandidaten Joe Biden.
There's really no controversy at the moment on the Democratic side. Joe Biden's the candidate. He's actually moving somewhat to the left, given the recent events such as the protests about George Floyd and so forth. So there is no controversy really in the Democratic side that I can see. There are a few primaries, some state kind of some races for the Democratic candidacy for Senate and so on and so forth in various states where there's some competition. Elliot Engel is under some pressure in New York and so on and so forth. But overall, Trump, as usual, dominates all interest. So currently, it's not so much Biden beating Trump; it's Trump beating Trump. He's so hated by a large proportion of the public, and he's so despised by a large proportion of the public that you'll probably be able to run a campaign with any functioning adult and beat Trump at the precise moment in time. But in fact, there was a piece in the Washington Post today where it said Democrats temper their optimism on Biden because things are so volatile at the moment that anything could happen politically, really.
To what extent is the COVID-19 situation here a factor? I mean, Joe Biden is seriously handicapped in his campaign, as far as we know and as far as we hear. Because he's not making big public events and he's focusing on video campaigns and television campaigns, which is running from his own house. So personal appearances are difficult. Is that something which is felt and does it play a role?
The thing is, I haven't been out of my house either for the last three months. Most people haven't. I think the suspicion that this is going to be an election which is lost, royally lost, as it were, by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So incompetent that, as I said, any functioning adult would be able to win the election. So I'm not sure it's to Joe Biden's disadvantage, really, that he isn't getting much airtime or it can't get out and publicly campaign. You just saw that Donald Trump managed to get out and campaign in the Tulsa rally. It was a complete and utter fiasco. And it's probably done him more harm because people now have contempt for him than they do any other kind of emotional response.
Well, one thing that one can say, I mean, he has not had a very good run recently.
Yeah? No, no.
There was the disaster of Tulsa, and with all the events around it, the discussion around it. There was the two decisions of the Supreme Court, which were very directed against Trump politics. There are the books that are coming out, the Bolton book and the book by his niece, I think, and so it's in the offing. So there's a lot of trouble brewing at the same time.
Hmm? Right. Now, and the thing is, that is what the situation is this week. But as Harold Wilson once said, right, a week is a long time in politics. So the one thing that gives me pause about, in some senses, optimistic situation as far as I'm concerned, right? Trump, I think, is doing himself in politically. The one thing that gives me pause is that, you know, who knows what will happen a week from now, 3 months ago, or whatever it was, 4 months ago, one wouldn't have thought that Trump could so mismanage the response to COVID-19 that we'd be in the situation we are in this country. And the other thing that gives me pause is, while the specifically kind of campaign political situation gives me, you know, is encouraging for someone like me, what Trump is doing to the country in terms of policy, in terms of what they're doing to the Voice of America, in terms of environmental regulations, it boggles the mind. Even if Joe Biden were to be successfully elected on November the 3rd, then you'll see what would happen between November the 3rd and January the 20th, because who knows what the Trump lot would get up to. And then even if he's president on January the 20th, there's a peaceful transfer of power, the ruination that he'll have to remediate in terms of policy, government, personnel, all kinds of things, America's position in the world, etc., will be huge. That it will take about 3 years to get that done, leaving him maybe a year to get anything positive done, I think. So, right. So on the one hand, there are encouraging signs. On the other hand, the complete mess that will be left, even if the Democrats win, is phenomenal.
Yeah, because so much has been destroyed and wrecked over the last years. That's going to be very difficult to build up again. Yeah. It's an interesting factor, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because we always concentrate on the leading personalities. Yeah. So you look at the United States, and everything is overshadowed at the moment with the personality of the president and all the sort of things that he's doing. Yeah. Nationally as well as on the international level. But at the same time, we have to look at the institutions and the damage that has been done to the institutions in those years. And we also have to look at the society in general, because it's not only the president who is a problem. There's a big societal change also going on in the United States, as we perceive it from outside, that things are said, done, articulated, which are a little bit, which are no longer really in line with sort of international thinking. I'm thinking now on social politics, I'm thinking of environmental politics, I'm thinking of the whole problem that has beset the recent discussion with racism and the open issue of race attitudes in the United States. So isn't that also a problem that has to be addressed?
Absolutely. So for instance, just in pure economic terms, right? The Trump economy was on the face of it looking very good, right? Underneath the surface, it was a terrible economy. But now the inability to respond to COVID-19, the pandemic in a sensible way, has been, I think, economically disastrous. So in Europe, for instance, right, in many cases, they basically kept the economy going to some extent, or in I think the Danish and even the British cases, they paid people to basically be still employed, right? So they kept the economy going. Well, here they didn't do any. So there's huge unemployment and so on. And again, that's something that if power changes, power is transferred in January, not November, in January, that again will be a huge mess to clear up. But you're right. I mean, socially, I think it's been, now, I would say this, Ava, that there are two ways of looking at this. One is to bewail the appalling influence of Trump and Trumpism on America. And it has been terrible. I mean, and for instance, it's now become clear that the police forces, right? There was an article today, I think, in The Guardian, no American police force meets international human rights standards.
Yes.
None of them.
Yes.
None of them. So for a kind of liberal like me, this is shocking, because America is supposed to be better than that. And I think a lot has been revealed in the last 3 years with Trump supporters and so on and so forth, and what goes on in the red states and so on and so forth, which is, I think, shocks a lot of East Coasters or West Coasters, right? The liberal sides of the country. For instance, the behavior of the Senate, right? And the Republican senators when it came to the impeachment was again, and the responses of the courts have often been shocking. Now, the Supreme Court had a couple of good decisions recently. What about the bad decisions that they've been passing recently? Yeah. So yes, there's a lot to worry about. God help us if Trump were to be re-elected. Because then many of the terrible trends would carry on. But another way of looking at it is that this has been revealed. The problems of racism in the police have been revealed. And interestingly enough, the public response to that, even in corporate America, has been actually quite encouraging. The NFL is changing its tune. Now, whether they end up doing what ironically the English Premier League is doing, and kneeling at the beginning of games in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, we should have to wait and see. But I do think that there has been kind of a change of attitude towards the kind of the common Kaepernick approach. So it could be that this is one of those moments it's not a revolutionary moment, but it is a point where a crisis comes and is. Things are revealed, and if Trump hadn't become president, actually probably the cause of progressives and so on wouldn't have gotten quite as far as fast in terms of public perceptions. Right? People would have still been arguing and criticizing President Hillary Clinton for doing stuff rather than concentrating on the fact that she'd been doing a better job. So it could be that we have a kind of this moment of crisis, which can actually bring proper change. But it all depends on people voting on November the 3rd.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
voters' participation is a big issue.
Right.
And
they're allowed to vote. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Coming back to what you just said, I mean, isn't it an interesting phenomenon to see how the Republican Party in itself has changed, that it has changed in a way from a political movement to a presidential adoration society, whatever. You have the feeling that they have given up their political character in a way.
Yes, they are not a Republican Party anymore. I mean,
no.
Those are very good. They don't believe in the Republic, for instance. They don't believe in the rule of law anymore. They are prepared to see the president break. I mean, the Attorney General is a disgrace at the moment. And that's not just me saying that. I mean, that's virtually everyone outside the Republican Party, and thinks that Barr has been just terrible. Recently, there was an article, probably again in the Guardian. It could have been in the New York Times or the Washington Post, which basically said the Republicans are no longer a party of policy. They are just interested in retaining power. That's the only thing they're interested in.
But that's not good enough. I mean, just retaining power is not good enough for a political.
No, it's terrible. It's appalling. As you will imagine, some of Esther and are my friends. Some of our best friends were Republicans, right? In the Washington setting. Now, generally liberal Republicans, but you know, nevertheless Republicans, loyal to Republican values. But they're no longer members of the Republican Party, because the Republican Party has completely given up on its Republican values. Republicans, there was a strong libertarian streak to it, rule of law, efficient government, et cetera, et cetera. Now they don't care about deficit spending. They had huge deficits, right? All they want is to retain power and to keep on cutting taxes so that their people can have the power and have the money. And that's about it. That's no way to run a country.
Well, it's not only a phenomenon for the United States. We see that in other countries and in other continents as well. I mean, Europe has not been spared. And here also we see that in many respects, political content is getting lost vis-a-vis sort of party allegiances and party rationales. Yeah.
Right.
On the other side, it has come to a point in the United States, which is really worrying, because there is no more, and I have seen the development personally in the many years that I've spent in the United States, how gradually the dialogue between political parties and political opponents also broke down. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And while I was in the United States, for instance, the transition from President Carter to President Reagan, yeah, which was also a fundamental switch, but nevertheless, was the beginning of sort of the commentary people, yeah, and the neocons and Norman Podoretz and so on. But there was a discussion going on. There was a dialogue and controversy and argument, yeah. Mm. And this,
based on fact,
in my opinion, has been gradually lost, yeah. At the moment, it's you are either in my camp or you are not. And if you are not in my camp, you are an opponent.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, Eva. Right? You mentioned commentary and neocons. The balance in American politics has moved so far to the right that Bill Kristol is now against Donald Trump. Bill Kristol, one of the classic commentary and neocons, right?
Yes.
So you have people like Steve Schmidt and Mike Wilson, these Republican election people, right? They hate Trump. They hate what the Republican Party has become. And yet,
President Reagan probably would have a hard time finding a place in the Republican Party.
I knew President Reagan. So yes, so it is phenomenal. Right? In fact, Jennifer, one of the best writers against administration has been Jennifer Rubin. who's a person of the right?
Stephen, before we go, could I introduce two issues which I find are very important if we look at the United States in general? The one is that we have seen over the years the growing inequality as a social problem. And I think that is really a factor that plays a big role in politics and the way politics are shaped and seen in the United States. That's the one thing. And the second thing, which I find very worrying looking at what is happening from outside, is this rejection, a growing rejection of expert opinion. Yeah, that the opinion of experts is either ridiculed, rejected, pushed aside, and in a way, expert and expertise has almost become a negative term. Do you see that as well?
Yes. Yes. Oh, absolutely. But you're right on both cases. And the of course, speaking as a historian and so on, I mean, it is the extent to which people just don't bother with listening to experts anymore. And in fact, if you say you're an expert, or if you're called an expert, then that immediately says, well, yeah, you're not a common man, therefore your view can't be correct. So that is terrible. On the inequality front, yes, there's definitely a major problem there, and it goes back to Ronald Reagan, this whole neoliberal idea that what you need to do is just free up the markets and everything will get bigger and better, which was in a sense true. It's just that everything that got bigger and better just went to the top 0.1% of the. So the inequality question is also very serious. There is a third factor, though, which I think explains a lot of American politics, which is the way in which this is, how this is ideologically shared out and geographically shared out is very strange. Because, for instance, there are prosperous parts of the United States. Most of the population is actually doing quite well. New York City, for instance, or California, right? The coasts are actually, because they also have income, they have local income taxes and so on and so forth, and because they're run by essentially left of center democratic administrations, the East Coast and the West Coast are doing quite well, and problems of inequality and all of that isn't quite as in other parts of the country. But here's the thing. So a lot of the problems of inequality, ironically, occur in the middle of the country, where they're very badly run, very minimally run state governments and so on and so forth. They're all more or less run by Republicans. And in fact, right, one of the problems of the United States has been the basic immiseration of the countryside compared to the cities. I mean, until the COVID-19 thing happened, well, quite what the consequences are, that we'll have to see. What emotionally, I think, gave Trump kind of support was the perception that kind of middle America was being kind of sucked dry by the coasts. And the coasts also had large mixed multicultural populations. So, and they were very relatively liberal and so on and so forth. So in fact, America was doing quite well on the coasts. It was in the middle that there was a very, very right-wing governments and very right-wing social situations. And the irony was that was where a lot of the poverty in the United States was. In fact, if you look at the way the federal budget works, it's the blue states. Apologies for the reversal of ideologies, but it's the more left wing states in the United States that give all their money to the federal government, and it's the red states. It's the right wing states in the middle. They take all the money. But one of the problems is that those states with relatively small populations in the middle, you know, the Kansas, the sort of North Dakota, South Dakota, and some of the southern states, they will only have about 50% of the population, and they are 35 states. Half the population, soon enough in this country, will be in the 15 states on the coasts and Illinois. The geographic trends in this country are actually hugely a huge benefit to the Republicans, to the right in this country.
And all of this, what we just said, Stephen, will be exacerbated by the fallout of the COVID-19 crisis. Unemployment, right. Rising poverty, yeah. Well, no, I mean, health insurance.
One of the horrific things, which, you know, is the fact what COVID-19 has revealed, but will also exacerbate, is the fact that the mortality rates from COVID-19 amongst minorities, especially African Americans, are much higher, much, much higher than amongst white people, and largely because of the fact that those minorities were not as well fed and not as well housed.
In a way, that brings us back to what we discussed a little bit earlier, that you have sort of the unresolved racial question with its economic consequences, with its social consequences, with its health consequences, plays an enormous role in the United States.
Sie hörten Eva Nowotny in einem Online-Talk des Bruno-Kreisky-Forums mit dem Historiker Stephen Beller in Washington, D.C. Beim Kreisky-Forum bedanke ich mich sehr herzlich für das Okay zu dieser Übernahme. Ich verabschiede mich von allen, die uns auf UKW hören, im Freirad Tirol und auf Radio Agora in Kärnten. Internationale Analysen finden Sie regelmäßig auch im Falter, genau genommen jede Woche. Daher dieser Hinweis: Ein Abo des Falter kann man auch im Internet bestellen über die Internetadresse abo.falter.at. Ursula Winterauer hat die Signation gestaltet, Anna Goldenberg betreut die Technik. Ich verabschiede mich bis zur nächsten Folge.
Sie hörten das Falterradio, den Podcast mit Raimund Löw.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.